The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Zion Primitive Baptist Church podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church, which is located in the Zion community near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Elder Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation of believers in the sovereign grace of God, where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. If you live in this area or are visiting here, we would love to have you attend worship services with us. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. I'm happy to note that our daily podcast is featured on Grace Alone Radio, which you can find at gracealoneradio.net. You can find the schedule on the website, and you can also download an app to your phone so that you can listen wherever you are. Grace Alone Radio is a 24-hour streaming service which carries the message of God's sovereign grace around the clock and around the world. Zion Primitive Baptist Church is located at 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. That's near the intersection of County Road 49 and Alabama Highway 159, about 8 miles north of Gordo, Alabama, and about 10 miles northeast of Reform, Alabama. If you're interested in finding more sermons, you can go to our website at zionpbc.com. That's zionpbc.com, where you'll find all of our posted sermons, as well as a link to subscribe to our podcast. You can also subscribe to our website, which will update you every time a new sermon is posted. We've come to a section in Elder Buddy Abernathy's study in the book of Revelation that I'm calling an interlude. This section begins in Revelation chapter 10 and goes through Revelation chapter 11 and verse 14. This is the interlude between the blowing of the sixth and seventh trumpets. In chapter 10, we read about a mighty angel standing upon the earth and the sea and declaring that there should be time no longer. Then in verse 7, the Lord speaks of the mystery of God. What is this mystery? In general, what is a mystery in the Bible? Join us today as Brother Abernathy begins to expound upon this concept and teaches us some rich truths about the gospel age in which we live.
When the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were as those who boldly dream. There are bells filled with laughter, our tongues with song, our praise flowed in joyful streams. We will live.
Revelation chapter 10 tonight. Now, last time we concluded chapter 9, where we read about what transpired after the sixth angel sounded his trumpet. Now, we've reached an interesting point because we've read about those first six angels sounding their trumpets. And now we're going to have an interlude before we hear the seventh trumpet. And that interlude is covered in all of chapter 10 and in chapter 11 down through verse 14. So this tends to make it even more difficult to keep the layout of Revelation in our mind. But since this interlude is separate and apart from what we've looked at so far about the first six trumpets, I don't think we need to review that information tonight. So we're going to try to look at the first seven verses of Revelation chapter 10. So we'll begin by reading those. "And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right foot upon the sea, and his left foot on the earth, and cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants, the prophets." Now he begins referring to another mighty angel. Now we know this is not one of those seven angels, because we've already read about six, and as I said previously, the seventh one is not mentioned until verse 15 in the following chapter. But you'll remember in chapter 9, verse 1, it says, "And this is when the fifth angel sounded, I saw a star fall from heaven into the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit." And you remember when that star fell from heaven and the bottomless pit was open, those creatures that had the appearance of locusts flew out of the bottomless pit. But the point I want to get from this tonight is, notice he says he saw a star fall from heaven. We learn in Revelation chapter 1, as we read about the seven churches, or the introduction to these seven churches, in chapter 1, verse 20, he says, "The mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks," the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. So we can connect all of that together and see that this star which fell from heaven could indeed be an angel. Now I realize there in Revelation chapter 1, when he refers to the angels of the seven churches, that word angel, meaning messenger, is referring to the pastors of those seven churches. I believe that's the application. But nonetheless, there in chapter 1, he refers to these stars as the angels of the seven churches. So if the word star in Revelation 1 can be descriptive of an angel in terms of a minister, then there's no reason we can't assume here in chapter 9, verse 1, that this star that fell from heaven was also an angel. So with that in mind, we go back to chapter 10 and we understand what he's referring to when he says, I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven. That is another star, another angel come down from heaven. So I hope you see how this is separate and apart from those seven angels with the seven trumpets. And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a white cloud. Now he gives a description of this angel, and I'll just give you my understanding of what these terms mean. That is how they describe this angel. And as we define these terms, you'll see how this is descriptive of God. Not that the angel is God, but this mighty angel came down from heaven. And when we read of him, as we read further about his description, we'll see that indeed this angel represents the characteristics of God in several ways. Now notice he says this angel was clothed with a cloud. Now, that can refer to majesty, in particular, divine majesty. And notice this, he said, a rainbow was upon his head. Now, we know the rainbow is a token of God's merciful covenant toward mankind. We don't have to guess about that, because in the day of the flood, you remember when that was over, that the bow appeared in the sky, and to this day, when we see a rainbow, the thought we're to have in mind is that that means the Lord is never going to send a worldwide flood to destroy the earth again. So as you read here that it says this mighty angel had a rainbow upon his head, that's to remind us that God is a covenant God. And in particular, this is referring to his covenant of mercy toward mankind, not just his children, but mankind in general, because the flood was a worldwide destruction. You know, his face was as it were, this angel, it said his face was as it were the sun. And we know that that speaks of God being so glorious that we can't look upon him. And it says his feet were as pillars of fire. Now that can refer to the stability of his counsels. Now, all of those descriptions could probably refer to other things, and I may be getting it wrong. But I think I can at least say with certainty that the rainbow represents God's covenant. And I can say with certainty that when it says his face was as it were the sun, that there are multiple other scriptures that teach how that man can't look upon the face of God. But I'm not sure what all the significance is of that description in verse 1. But as we continue to read, the verses will fit together in a way that hopefully we can perhaps have more insight as to their interpretation. This mighty angel had in his hand a little book open. Now we're not going to read about that little book until the latter verses of this chapter, the verses we did not read tonight, and we'll see in due time that that is God's word. But that's not going to be discussed yet, it's just introduced. This mighty angel had in his hand a little book open. Now you say, well, if it's God's word, why is it a little book? We'll hopefully talk about that later on. Now notice how big and powerful this angel is that had a little book in his hand. He set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot on the earth, and cried with a loud voice as when a lion roareth. And when he cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. Now let's try to get a specific idea of what this is talking about. Now, when you think of thunders, you know, Jesus talked about, or rather, he used lightning as a description of what it would be like at his coming. And the idea is when there's lightning at your house, it's seen by the whole community. It's not just at your house. And the thunder from that lightning goes all over the area. You know, you can hear that thunder rolling and rumbling through the air. So the idea describing these thunders that uttered their voices is that this is something that is heard all over. This is not something secret. This is not something limited. This is a powerful, loud voice. And notice he says it's like when a lion roareth, and it says there are seven thunders. And the word seven means completion. So whatever's under consideration here, it's something that is a loud, broad voice, something that's heard everywhere, and whatever it represents is something that has or will be complete. Now that's the main thought so far in this. Now notice this. Verse 4. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. So what do we have so far? We have these loud voices, and whatever they're proclaiming, it has something to do with something being completed, either now or in the future. And John heard the voices. The angel told him, notice in verse 4, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered and write them not. Evidently, even though these are loud thundering voices, they were heard by John. You say, well, now wait a minute. If they were loud thundering voices and only John heard them, that seems to be a contradiction. Well, the idea here is, like the rest of Revelation, this was revealed to John. But he's showing us that what has been revealed from John is something that is broad and uttered in a loud way, even though it's not yet heard in such a broad way. You see what I'm saying? John has heard these voices, and these voices, when they're really made known, it'll be worldwide. It'll be a general thing. But he says, seal up those things and write them not. And you say, well, Brother Buddy, that just sounds confusing. Well, if you're trying to preach it, it's really hard. But hopefully we'll be able to give you some insight on this. Now he says, verse 5, and the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer. So think of this scene. Next, in the next verse is where we're going to focus on one particular thing and go to some of the literal teachings of Paul's epistles. But think of this scene. A mighty angel with a little book in his hand. And this angel cried with a loud voice like a lion. It was like these loud thundering voices. And John evidently was the only one that heard it as it was being revealed, although it was descriptive of something that was heard in a general way. But at this time, whatever these loud voices are saying was only at this time revealed to John, because he was told not to write it down. And then this verse we just read says, as this angel stood upon the sea and he lifted up his hand to heaven, what he declared was that there should be time no longer. Now hopefully verse 7 is going to put together some of this. Notice this. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, we've heard the first six angels blow their trumpets. The seventh angel has not blown his trumpet, but he's saying, in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. Now, if you'll read tonight or tomorrow about that seventh angel in Revelation 11:15, there's no question that what follows the sounding of his trumpet is indeed the second coming of Christ, the end of time, the consummation of all things. But he said here, this mighty angel said that there should be time no longer. But what I want to focus on is verse 7. In the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished. Now, it's my understanding that everything I've read about in these first seven verses can be better understood in light of this expression. And that is, when the seventh angel sounds, which is referring to the end of time and the consummation of all things, he uses this term to describe that. The mystery of God should be finished. Now here's something we can look at that we don't have to try to figure out what it represents symbolically, because this is a subject matter that's addressed in many New Testament epistles. Now, first of all, what is a mystery in the Bible? We normally think of a mystery as something that we can't figure out or something that can't be resolved. We think of, for example, a murder mystery, a murder that hasn't been solved. We lack the information we need, and at the point we're at, we don't see any way we'll ever receive that information. We'll never figure it out. We'll never solve it. In the Bible, the word mystery is not used in that way. The word mystery in the Bible, it's that which cannot be understood without divine revelation. You remember those parables? Jesus spoke to them in parables. He used in the parable of the sower that lesson about agriculture that anybody could understand. But it took the divine revelation of God to his people that they might make a spiritual application of it, that they might understand the spiritual meaning.
Due to the constraints of time, we will stop the message here. But please join us tomorrow for the conclusion of this message. If you would like to subscribe to our website, please go to www.zionpbc.com and sign up for email updates. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact the church at zionpbc1847@gmail.com. That's zionpbc1847@gmail.com. Or you can email me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J, chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. May the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.